This is Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. Our special guest today, an old returning friend, is Len Savage. And Len is going to be giving us an update on the Olufsen case and some other peculiar things that are going on because of our friends at the BATFE. And Len, welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Well, where do we start?
Let's start with the Olufsen case. As of January 22nd, the appeals court has heard oral arguments, and we're awaiting its decision as to whether or not Mr. Olufsen got a fair trial.
Any speculation on how that's going to go with the appeals court?
It's a little unknown. There's been some promising questions by the court. There certainly has been some interesting things going on with respect to some of the players in the Olufsen case and my company. About 4 months after the original trial happened, one of the people at the trial from the ATF, a firearms enforcement officer from our old friends at Firearms Technology Branch at the ATF, was assigned into a position of authority over my company. I had submitted a product, firearm, to them for evaluation, and the ATF took it by force.
They just took it by force?
Yeah, they've taken it by force. They refused to give it back, and they've charged the gun with a crime. As a matter of fact, they issued an arrest warrant for the inanimate object and served it on the firearm, and now it looks like in the Northern District of Georgia, my firearm is going to get a jury trial.
Is this technically a firearm, or is it just an accessory?
Well, it is an accessory, and it's just technically a firearm. It has to do with the definition of a frame or receiver. In order to try to be cooperative with the ATF, my company, we had outlined to the ATF for how it had technically fallen under the definition of a firearm and had taken some steps. And since it had a barrel length of less than 15 inches, the firearm was actually registered with the ATF as a short-barreled rifle. And at their request, I sent it in to them so that they could take a look at it and, you know, verify everything was legal. And they refused to give it back. So what ended up happening is they issued an arrest warrant. The gun's been in federal custody ever since last April.
So your gun has been arrested, and people need to understand the lunacy of this situation. An inanimate object's been arrested. It's been in custody. We certainly hope they're feeding it and keeping it warm.
Well, I haven't been allowed to visit it, so I don't know what kind of treatment it's getting.
Well, if it comes back all banged up and rusted, you'll know for sure.
Well, that's a fact. But we did get the gun some top-notch, top-shelf representation. Our old friend, Monroe Whitesides, and a real go-getter here from Georgia, John Monroe, are representing the firearm. The case has entered what they call the discovery phase. So for the next 3 or 4 months, you know, not much is going to happen other than we're asking the government for information and documents, and after that period, they'll schedule a trial. And because it's a dispute of fact, the gun gets a jury trial.
Would it be safe to assume that the arrested gun is now taking the Fifth Amendment and is waiting for trial?
Gee, let's hope so. You see just how ridiculous this is. The government calls it legal fiction, but there's nothing fictional about the fact that the government used its power and force to take my company's property and doesn't want to give it back. They are officially seeking its condemnation.
Would you mind speculating as to why you think the government is being so nice to you?
Well, let's just say that there's a recurring pattern. If I find myself in federal court testifying to facts, typically the ATF shows a bias afterwards. If you remember, this is not the first time the ATF has either changed its mind or pulled a stunt after a court case. After U.S. v. Wren, less than 4 months after that, the ATF reclassified a product that they had already classified as neither a firearm nor a machine gun, and wrote me a letter and said, "You didn't build any of those, did you? Because that'd be a felony if you did." It appears that they don't want the facts to come out.
Well, which facts do you think they really want to cover up?
Well, the fact that they don't have a testing standard over at FTB. There's no way to establish any standard of how they tested the firearm in Olufsen's case. And the standards seem to shift from manufacturer to manufacturer, from person to person. And because of that, I mean, how can anybody judge that they're making a reasonable decision?
You know, for people who are a little bit late in coming into this debate, it's been going on for quite some time, perhaps you could just take a moment and describe the Olufsen case.
in a nutshell, David Olufsen owned an AR-15 made by SGW Olympic Arms that was made in the mid-1980s. Olympic had burned down. There's actually no way to know precisely when his rifle was built by them to a date, and their records were destroyed in the fire. But what we do know is that the government had wrote a letter in 1986 to SGW Olympic Arms and brought to their attention that the use of certain parts were to be stopped. You know, don't use these parts because we've discovered that you can have an accidental discharge and this is unsafe. And so they did. And Mr. Olufsen's rifle was built before that time. The ATF was well aware that the firearm was prone to malfunction. We don't know. I was never allowed to examine the firearm, so I couldn't tell you if those were original SGW Olympic parts or if the ATF installed them. I do know that Mr. Olufsen made a request to the court that they fingerprint the inside of the gun so it could be established as to who installed the parts. But the bottom line is, his gun, which fired as a semi-automatic, he had loaned it out to an individual who went to a public range, and after approximately 800 rounds of ammunition, the gun fired, or misfired, if you will, and shot two or three rounds and then jammed. The range reported this to the local police. They came and took the firearm, and then they sent it to the ATF, who sent it off to the folks at Firearms Technology Branch, the folks with no written testing standard. They tested the gun and said, look, it's just a rifle. It is not a machine gun. We note that these parts are installed, but, you know, nothing here. The agent in charge of the case in Wisconsin, I think it was Agent Jody Kiku, asked FTB to test it again, and this time use soft primer ammunition, which is, you know, known to cause malfunctions in an AR-15 rifle. The reason is an AR-15 does not have a spring on the firing pin. It relies on the military-grade primer to reset the firing pin. If you use soft-primered ammunition, the gun will fire a few rounds, jam, and that's precisely what happened during the second test. And on the basis of the second test, and the second test only, they took David Olufsen to court. The ATF testified about the firearm, although I was asked by the judge to leave the courtroom, so I couldn't hear what the ATF said. And what ended up happening is Mr. Olufsen's attorney, who doesn't understand the technical aspects of a firearm, was helpless. He didn't have the aid of technical advice from me, who, and since I build guns, I do understand how they work on the inside. Mr. Olufsen was convicted and sent to prison for owning a unregistered machine gun, or illegally transferring a machine gun, I believe is what they accused him of. Nobody officially owned this or was charged with illegal ownership, just an unlawful transfer. And from there, Mr. Olufsen got some really good representation and sought an appeal on his conviction, and is waiting in prison for the appeals court to make its determination.
Well, I'm glad to see our tax dollars are being spent wisely by the government and buying soft primered ammunition. But there's something else new afoot here. There's a rumor, perhaps, about an effort by ATF to use what they call a forward trace program, which would end up helping the government to register firearms.
Talk about a waste of tax dollars. Mr. James Zamillo, he's the Deputy Assistant Director of Field Operations for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, has sent out a letter explaining ATF's forward trace initiative. Now, before we talk about forward traces, you need to understand that already there's a mechanism in place coast to coast that if a gun is used in a crime, the National Tracing Center traces that gun backwards all the way back to the original manufacturer so they can find out how did it get in the hands of a criminal. After the crime occurs, they trace the gun. The ATF has taken upon itself to do what they call a forward tracing initiative. And I've got the text of this letter he's sent to the industry. It's very, very short. Let me just read this to you, what Mr. Zamillo sent out. I would like to take this opportunity to describe the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Nationwide Forward Tration Initiative. As you know, federal law 18 U.S.C. Chapter 44 requires federal firearms licensees to maintain and make available certain records for inspection by ATF. Among the required records are acquisition, where'd you get the gun, that's what that means, and disposition. Who did you sell this gun to? That's what A&D means, acquisition and disposition. ATF forms 4473. This is the form you fill out when you purchase a firearm at retail level. And anyway, verifying this information is critical to our mission of protecting the public, as it is the starting point for an FFL retailer accounting for firearms received. Through partnership and with continued cooperation of the firearms community, the Forward Trace Initiative was implemented by the ATF to ensure firearms are properly accounted for by FFL retailers. The program focuses on types of firearms that are diverted by the criminal element from legal commerce. ATF industry operations investigators will visit manufacturers and ask for their assistance by identifying specific firearm makes, models, and ask for the same of the distributor from whom they were sold. We will then follow the gun to the eventual retailer. Any information requested by ATF as part of this program does not presume any wrongdoing by those firearms and industry members contacted, but simply will be used as a tool to ensure accountability for firearms received by FFL retailers. Cooperation by the industry with our forward trace request is voluntary and is not considered an ATF inspection under federal law and regulations. Industry members supplying any information are requested by ATF not to initiate any action as a result of our inquiry because it could potentially impact any ATF inspection or investigative effort. As always, if a manufacturer, importer, or distributor has concerns regarding any retailer, they should contact an ATF office for assistance. What they're saying is, and they're barred by the TART amendment from tracing guns that aren't involved in a crime, in a way, the only I can assume to get around that amendment is asking manufacturers to voluntarily turn over their books. And remember, they only say certain types of weapons. I think we can guess what kind of weapons those will be, and they're probably not going to be a break-action single shot. But with Eric Holder's, Attorney General Eric Holder's statement about wanting an assault weapons ban, now the ATF has got this secret program. Don't tell anybody, but we want you to give us your records, and we want to know who owns what. And I think that that is just anti-constitutional and anti-American, because if you purchased a firearm and you didn't commit a crime, why does the ATF want to know you own it? Why does the ATF want to know what retailers? Now, they say that this is to make sure that there's accountability, but there's already in industry operations a mechanism that does that. We're inspected regularly to make sure that our books are correct and that, you know, we're keeping the required records. But in effect, the ATF is developing a registry of these certain types of firearms without the knowledge of Congress and without the knowledge of the purchasers or the retailers. Why do they want to know where these guns are? What businesses are of theirs? And why do we have a federal law enforcement entity? The ATF is federal law enforcement. Why are they chasing down firearms that have not been used in a crime yet? No crime has been committed. Why are they tracing forward when the TART amendment says you're not supposed to trace a gun unless there's been a crime committed? So these are the questions I have, and it's just starting to murmur through the industry, and I found out about this, and my blood pressure went up because this is just wrong. This is wrong on many levels.
This is Talking to America. Our guest today is Len Savage. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman, and we're talking about more shenanigans, more wrongdoings, more criminal activity by the BATFE. Len, this is very interesting because there's the other half to this, the other side to it, is that when a dealer goes out of business, they turn in their 4473 forms to the government.
Yeah.
They've been doing this for decades.
Yes.
Probably since 1968. And so this is a double form of registration.
Well,
and as we all know from the research that JPFO has shown, that governments that are able to disarm people are also able to kill them. And we have a government now, and we've had one forming for quite some time, that has absolutely no interest in having an armed citizenry. And they belong to groups like the United Nations who claim there are just too darn many people on the face of the earth. I hope someone out there takes this situation very seriously.
The fact that they're saying that they're doing this to make a safer America is a slap in the face. If there's been a crime, certainly. Crimes need to be punished. Bad people who use guns need to be punished, just as the same bad people who use cars to run over people, baseball bats, knives. If you look what's going on over in the U.K., sometimes it's referred to as Sarah Brady paradise because nobody can own a firearm. And knifings, stabbings, and clubbings have filled in the hole, if you will. Okay, there's no longer any gun crime. It doesn't mean that the crimes are no longer happening. And, you know, the current administration very recently seems to be hanging all the problems that are happening in Mexico with these drug cartels at the door of the American firearms industry. I can tell you, they talk about gun show loopholes. You can't buy an RPG, a rocket-propelled grenade, at a gun show. They have been heavily restricted since 1934. And you can't buy a machine gun openly and just walk away from it at a gun show. It doesn't happen. It's been regulated since 1934. It is legal in the United States to own a machine gun if you choose. But you have to undergo an FBI background check. You have to have your county sheriff or chief of police sign off on your application. They want your picture. They issue basically a title for this gun with your mug on it, and you're given this, and you're not allowed to loan this gun to anybody. But what I can tell you is that the owners of NFA-type weapons, this is silencers, sawed-off shotguns, machine guns, are the most responsible gun owners in America. Since 1934, only two crimes have ever been committed with an NFA weapon. And by the way, those two crimes were committed by members of law enforcement. So it's this misnomer when they talk about, oh, automatic weapons are sneaking across the border down into Mexico. That's foolhardy. And it's been exposed. Even the L.A. Times got it when they said, hey, look, we realize these are all coming up from Central America. And if they are American-made weapons, that's because American manufacturers made them for the United States government, who sold them to the Mexican military, who turned around and gave them to the cartels or sold them or what have you. And pay very close attention to how they are labeling this stuff. Because what you're seeing is propaganda. Scratch the surface, and you'll find out that it's all spin. It's all propaganda.
It's propaganda with quite an agenda, a very ugly agenda. I would like to remind people, if they want to know more about the criminality of the BATFE, that we do have a movie called The Gang. It's a documentary film about an hour and a half that Lynn Savage helped us make. And if you haven't seen it, it'll open your eyes as to how the ATF actively engages in perjury in court. They're very proud of that. And how they actively try to entrap innocent gun owners. Len, there's some other court cases that are floating around. Are you allowed to talk about some of them, just a little bit, just an overall view? Or?
Well, there's definitely one going on currently that I cannot talk about because I'll be called as a witness. And there has there's been some court cases that are pretty much settled now, like United States versus Albert Kwan. Albert Kwan was an industry manufacturer. He was an 07. He was licensed, and he ran a business out in Washington. The ATF basically ran this guy around in circles, charged him with multiple crimes. He ended up going to court. They of course, charged him with possessing a machine gun. Here's the unique thing. We get into court, and the fellow from FTB, Firearms Technology Branch, turns around and testifies that he modified the weapon, that he went and got parts, put them, you know, after machining the firearm to accept the parts, installs them and says because he could make a machine gun out of Mr. Kwan's weapon, that Mr. Kwan was guilty of having an unregistered machine gun. Now, Mr. Kwan beat that count in court, and the ATF then misrepresented some facts about a so-called short-barreled rifle. Albert Kwan owned a VP-70 Z, which was the civilian version, which meant semi-automatic, made by Heckler & Koch in Germany. He also owned a VP-70M, lawfully, which is the machine gun version. And because they could take the shoulder stock that attached to the machine gun and could attach it to his semi-automatic pistol, even though Albert Kwan didn't attach the two, because the ATF attached the two, they charged Albert Kwan with a crime and says, well, because we can do this with what you had, we're charging you with possessing a short-barreled rifle because, you know, it now fires from the shoulder because it has a shoulder stock, and its barrel length is less than 16 inches. And the interesting thing in Mr. Kwan's case is, after the trial, the judge figured it out through looking at some things because his attorney had made a motion, says, Your Honor, take a look at this, and determined that the Supreme Court had already ruled on this with United States versus Thompson Center. It says, look, if there's another obvious use for a gun part that could be used to make an unlawful gun, then, you know, there's no crime here. You know, there's a utility. There's a purpose for it, and it's a legitimate purpose. And the government, believe it or not, appealed this to the Ninth Circuit, which is, you know, pretty liberal. And even the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals says, no way. This has been covered by the Supreme Court. No crime here. Forget it. That was, I think, back in 2007. They're just playing fast and loose with the facts.
Let me ask you a quick question. Going back to the Kwan issue, is the ATF still, even though they lost the case and even though they lost it on appeal, are they still taking the position that if they can alter it to be a machine gun, even if you've got a pair of old shoes and they decide to alter them to become a machine gun?
Yes, they are.
That they can still get away with this?
Going back to my unfortunate arrested firearm that's now facing trial, it can do nothing. What it is it's a caliber conversion for a lawfully possessed firearm. Like I said, technically, it's a firearm, only because the ATF, well, how do I want to put this? Let me put this into context. In 1968, the Gun Control Act passed. Part of the Gun Control Act determined what part of a firearm was the frame or receiver. The willing suspension of disbelief on behalf of the ATF to enforce that. The AR-15 is the semi-automatic version of the M-16. All right. The law specifically says, look, the firearm frame or receiver is that part that that houses the breech or bolt, is typically threaded at its forward end to receive a barrel. Even though the ATF considers the lower portion of an AR-15 to be the firearm, that's where you will find the serial number and the manufacturer's information, the law states it's actually the upper that contains no serial number and no manufacturer's information. And this is a real cute parlor trick that the ATF pulls out from time to time. They'll turn around when you submit a product and say, oh, no, this is a firearm frame or receiver, and then they'll trot this the law out that explains it. And because of that reason, and because we feel that we can modify this into a machine gun, this is unlawful. And it's real cute, but when you apply it to items that are already in production and have been in production since 1968, you find out, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't add up. If this is indeed a firearm frame or receiver, then how come every other one out there isn't considered a firearm frame or receiver? And so they pick and choose. And it sounds real technical when they throw it out because they're citing the law, and somebody looking at it on the surface says, you know, boy, right there's the bolt or breech, and yep, it's threaded at its forward end. Yep, that's a firearm. But the fact remains, the product I sent into ATF was for the MAC series machine gun and semi-automatic. And it was designed because lawful possessors of these MAC guns were looking for a cheaper ammunition to shoot through them. So I was trying to fulfill a need and make a couple of bucks along the way. And there's nothing wrong. Profit's not a four-letter word. And I went through all, even though it's voluntary, I was going to work, and give the ATF every opportunity. And we sent this into him. And the first thing that the ATF does is they start attaching things to this firearm. And they attached a metal plate, zip ties, and duct tape, went to go test the firearm, and it blew apart. Not really a surprise to anybody who understands how firearms works. Well, when that didn't work, they went back and says, well, this time we used the metal plate, quarter-inch steel chain, and some tension bolts, and mounted it in a vise, and now we were able to make this thing fire as a machine gun, therefore this is a machine gun, and it's unlawful, and we're charging the gun with a crime of being a machine gun. But remember that the Firearms Technology Branch are the same people who classified a shoestring as a machine gun because they say that you can attach a shoestring to a semi-automatic rifle in such a manner to induce fully automatic fire. And they said this two times, got a little embarrassed by, not having people mandated, registration of shoestrings. And then they came out with a third letter, I think last year, that says, look, a shoestring is only a machine gun if you tie it on to a semi-automatic in order to induce fully automatic fire. So the ATF says, look, in general, the use of ordinary items attached to a firearm in order to try to convert it to a machine gun is unlawful, on one hand, and then turn around when their firearm by me is submitted to them and then start attaching everything but the kitchen sink in order to try to convert it to a machine gun. And this all goes back to the fact that they don't have any kind of standard for me to judge whether or not what they're doing is reasonable. Of course, common sense tells you no way. But pardon the pun, but trying to get ATF compliance on a firearm right now is trying to hit a moving target. Because you'll send it in because it's been established they're going to test it with one method, and then they use a different method. And it's not uncommon in the industry to have the same gun submitted by three different manufacturers in the U.S. Two out of the three get a letter back and say, no, this is readily restorable. We were able to make this into a machine gun. And then turn around and the third person, for whatever reason, is told by the ATF, oh, no, this is fine. This is just a firearm. And you can compare all three letters against one another and scratch your head and say, how in the heck are they making these decisions? And how can they claim any of these decisions are reasonable? Now, I once asked off the record, and I won't give his name, because I said, all right, look, what's going on, and why won't you guys give some sort of written standard? And his exact response was, we like the latitude we have with the current system, and we feel that if we were to put down the rules in writing, then somebody will figure out a way around them. And that should give you an insight of how they think. If somebody's working within the rules and is being innovative, you're not working around the rules. You're working a way to make your product compliant. And it all comes down to there seems to be an agenda that they just don't want certain types of firearms produced, or they don't want them produced by certain individuals. Although, they won't tell anybody as to the method or madness to their reasoning. And the scary part is not only guys in the industry like me get hammered on, but there's people like Mr. Olson, Mr. Kwan, and let's not forget Johnny Glover years back. Remember that back in 2004, 2005?
Oh, absolutely, because we use this story in the gang.
It's a pattern here, and it's a pattern that what I can tell you is that pattern has not stopped.
Okay, well, Len, we have reached the end of our half hour. You want to take just a moment to wrap things up?
I want everybody out there, if you're willing, take the time. Don't just call. Don't just email. Contact your reps. Let them know. If this, what I'm presenting to you, is bothering you, absolutely contact them. And if you think that I'm not being 100% accurate with anything I'm saying, go research it. Everything's documented that I've been that's been discussed here today. You can find it. It's there. It's for real. And I would like to do a shout out to somebody who I know's always listens to your show, and that's hello, James P. Van, and I hope you're doing well, and glad you're listening.
James P. Van is an attorney, right? He's with the ATF.
Oh, yeah, he's a fan of your show.
But he's not a fan of me personally or JPFO, as I understand. But we'll get into that some other day. Well, Len, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. This has been Talking to America. Our guest has been Len Savage with Historic Arms. And I'm Aaron Zellman, your host. And I want to remind all of you, you've heard me tell you this before, but it's very critical now. If you won't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talkin' to America is a production of JPFO.org.